Welcome to Dug Too Deep, the officially unofficial podcast for The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Today we're talking Season 1, Episode 6, that I think is titled, You Done? You Done?
No. It's Udun.
Udun.
And everyone that's watched the Peter Jackson film is familiar with this term. You might not know it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless
that's
you hear
me.
It in context. The context is Gandalf standing on a stone bridge facing a Balrog saying, I am a servant of the secret fire, wielder of the flame of Arnor. The dark fire will not avail you, flame of Undun.
The power of Christ compels you, flame of Yadun.
All that. Udun means, it's Elvish for hell, essentially. Mm. It's an alias of one of Morgoth's mightiest fortresses, and you're supposed to get the idea that the orcs are recreating their homeland. Perhaps
you can banish
freed.
A Balrog with the power of hell?
Well, he's just calling him a flame of hell. He wields the flame of Arnor, which Elvish of the Sun. He's saying, I serve the light of day. You are a fire and shadow, and I'm going to adjust your ass to ears ratio here in about 2-3 seconds if you don't watch out. And by God, he did. I don't know if you saw the cold open to the Two Towers, but he really took it to that Balrog.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of Udun?
Oh boy, man. Let's start off with the good. I think there were some really great battle scenes, and they surprised me with how good they are. I really liked the stuff with Arendir fighting this big ass orc. I thought that stuff was fun and very cool, and not in a surfing your shield kind of way. And I really liked that they sort of surprised me with the tower scheme that they had going, because I was super nervous when that scene started, going like, you know, you guys have like the most defensible position in the entire world that I could possibly imagine. This treacherous path up to your castle is impassable if you want it to be. But then they just let them walk in the door, and I'm like, oh no, this is a horrible setup. It turned out to be totally okay. I just needed to chill out and wait, and the tower collapse was very cool. I like that.
Yeah, I was puckered up too. I'm like, oh God, why? Like, imagine in Helm's Deep if they just let him come in and like, right. Oh, that's a brilliant plan. But I'm like, oh, you know what? This is actually, it seems like that this tower is pre-rigged to do exactly that. And I noticed in the weeks before it was held together like these bands of whatever, and it was designed to essentially cause a landslide and destroy everything, and you know, self-destruct and everything that kind of led up to that, you know, the way he cut the rope and it auto barricaded them in. I thought that.
Yeah, very cool.
But it was shaky. It was like, oh, man, I don't know. And it turned out OK.
Turned out really good. I thought it was a good, solid plan.
Yeah,
And we, you know, get a lot of just really cool stuff this episode. But then you get to the end of this episode and it turns into Walking Dead episode 2. Two weeks in a row here. I don't know how they are going to resolve the thing that happens at the end of this episode, but it seems unresolvable. I think any possible solution you come up with for this, whether they just survive somehow, JSS, to bring it back to Walking Dead, or they end up, this is just like a dream sequence or a vision, none of that feels
that
good.
Satisfying.
I
will say this, that if they had structured this episode such that they ended on the cliffhanger of the orcs going into the apparently abandoned tower, and they cut there, I'd be like, this seems fucking stupid. They've abandoned their fortification. You know, this seems like a 5-year-old's idea of a military strategy. And then they would have started next week and I'd look like a fucking idiot.
Sure.
I got to say, I feel like they told the story at the end of this episode of everyone, all of the good people and a lot of the orcs just being wiped off the map.
But that includes
a pyroclastic flow. Galadriel, like everybody.
Galadriel?
I feel like they're telling the story of an absolute holocaust. It's just everything's going to be burnt to ash. Pompeii returned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it seems like the only way they could resolve it is if it is a dream or a vision or something. But boy, that's
How dissatisfying. Boy,
a false dream cliffhanger is kind of a bummer. But I don't know. I'm going to... Otherwise, I thought the episode is excellent, and I'm not... There's plenty of time next week for us to bitch and moan about it if it turns out to be ridiculous.
Well, I think there's plenty of time to do it this week, too, because this is the type of cliffhanger that I always say is bullshit.
Yeah,
it doesn't tell me what happened. It doesn't tell me what happened, because in my mind, everybody is dead. Clearly, everyone can't be dead. So it doesn't tell me what actually happened here. It only... the cliffhanger I like tells me what happens, and then it's up to me to go... Oh boy, how is everyone going to react to this big, huge event that happened? That's a cliffhanger.
Or another acceptable cliffhanger. The literal definition of a cliffhanger, a hero hanging from the cliff, dangling, like, is his fingers going to slip?
Sure.
Because that's not an immediately lethal situation. Mm-hmm. The hero standing beside a nuke and the timer going down to 000 and then a faraway shot of the nuke going off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that guy's just right, but he can't die. So, like, it is annoying. It's not. It's even if they find a way to pull it out, it feels like I'm still going to be annoyed, because then it's schmuck bait, where it's like it's only for the 5 and 6 year olds in the room to think that they were going to kill these people, because it's Isildur, it's Elendil, it's Galadriel, yeah. So I don't know. Other than that, I thought it was a pretty good episode. Everyone's talking about how, Hot D is the fantasy series After Dark, and T-Rop is the family friendly entertainment. This is not family friendly. I feel like people are getting hardcore fucked, dick down, boob TNA, but. It's as hairy of gory violence as I've ever seen.
That scene with Erendir putting a splinter into the orc's eye is gruesome.
It's pretty brutal. It's pretty brutal for sure.
Yeah, and then you've got fucking lava bombs landing on people, landing on
that
kids.
Fuck that one Numenorean in particular. He just got melted by a lava ball.
Yeah, it's amazing. I loved seeing the explosion. I think it looked incredible. And I don't know. There's something about me. I couldn't help but laugh out loud as Numenoreans and Southerners alike are getting lava bombed. But it's definitely not family friendly there. So,
man, really missing I really miss the Harfoots and the dwarves every time we don't get to them.
Yeah.
It is. I guess it's nice that we narratively focused on this one thing. And it's one spot of Middle Earth, but boy, I do miss the Harfoots, and I do miss the Dwarfen, the Durin and Elrond show in particular.
They did a pretty good job for me of keeping me distracted enough by the plot that was going on that I didn't actively miss them while it was happening. Okay. I didn't look at the end of the episode and go, boy, well, maybe it's because I had other things to worry about at the end of this episode, but I wasn't thinking, I really wish we had seen more of the Dwarves and the Harfoots.
Yeah.
This might be the best elf and Southerner, specifically like Numenor and Southerner episode we've seen yet, I think.
I still think Isildur is a fucking tool. I do not like this guy. And nothing in this episode made me really change my mind about that.
Sure.
Oh, it's just unfortunate. But maybe they're just telling the, like, I saw a guy on TikTok. It's like, I think they're just telling the story of Isildur as seen in Lord of the Rings, because in that epilogue and all the flashbacks, he's just kind of a dick.
He sucks.
He accidentally beat Sauron after his old man gets stomped out. He has a chance to defeat the ultimate evil weapon of the enemy, and he's just like, no, I like it on my neck better. And then he gets ganked by a bunch of rando orcs and loses it for an age. Like what a tool bag. And maybe they're just telling this. He's just kind of a feckless idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause they are telling, hey, A+ job on that storytelling, if that's what's happening, because I've completely bought into the fact that this guy is a Numenorean fuckboy.
In that case,
not much to recommend him.
You go west, take a boat, just sail west and don't ever come back.
Go to old Numenor, go to the where it's still, go love you some elves.
Yeah, just fall off the map somewhere. All right. I suggest we get into the recap.
Yeah, let's do it. There's a lot more Rings of Power to ponder. We'll be back right after this short break.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Now, let's dig a little deeper on Dug Too Deep.
We start off with Adar planting some seeds and delivering a rousing speech to his orcs, his orc brothers and sisters, I suppose, before they march to take the tower.
It implies there's some female orcs.
Sure.
I know they did. There was a lot of like ha-ha-ho-ho in the original series or movie series about dwarves. Dwarvish women looking the same as dwarvish men, but if there's lady orcs in here, then they're just they're hard for my human eye to tell apart because it looks like they're all very dude elves. But maybe they're
maybe the one Arendir was fighting was a female. I don't know.
Could be, but yeah, he said it's the first time as brothers and sisters.
So they're about to march and take the tower, and when they arrive, they find it totally abandoned, except for Arendir, who brings the tower down on their heads, and then the humans back in the village see the tower fall, and they celebrate, and then begin readying the village for defense, because they know another attack is coming. They didn't get them all.
Yeah, I'm like this Adar guy. I thought he was going to die throughout various parts of this episode, and I found myself getting nervous because I think he's a very effective bad guy, and he's played by a good actor, and he's inherently interesting. In fact, I thought Galadriel came off bad in their exchange. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, threatening genocide. Yeah, it's not a good look.
Yeah, especially, yeah, we'll talk about that.
I'm getting very right. strong, like, Rickman, Alan Rickman vibes from this guy.
Oh,
and
interesting.
That might be why I think he's so good.
You know, it seems like he's trying to liberate these people who've had a bad, like, honestly, this is one, I think yeah. this is the most inspiring speech we've had, and it's given by the bad, the evil side, you know, like, we have endured mm-hmm. much, but now we've cast off our shackles, we've journeyed far on bleeding feet. And yes, we may die, but we'll die as a first time as brothers and sisters in our own home. And then the orcs start chanting Nampat, which is black speech for death, which, you know, straight to the point. I still, so like now I super don't get this, Aes Tirith. I thought it was, I don't know, maybe Sauron designed it to fall apart too, but like. It's I guess more and more it's just looking like this was an outpost the elves took over, an evil outpost the elves took over, hung mm-hmm. up some ivy curtains to hide the untasteful decor, and just took it over.
Yeah, and it already was like kind of crumbly. Maybe they reinforced it with these straps, and then
yeah,
cut one, it comes down on their heads.
It was cool because again, I was really like. I don't know. This seems dumb to abandon a fortress. Like, how in the world are you ever going to get a better one than this? And it may, there also might be room to complain about, like, why didn't they at least have a couple archers just raining down hell that the entire approach, you know, weed them out one by one and then draw them into the fortress and do the same thing. But honestly, I was so pleasantly surprised that they had something awesome. That, like, whatever, man. You did a good one. You did a good one at the start of this episode.
It wasn't optimal. It wasn't perfect, but it was good enough.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going through Adar's head here, because he just sort of decides to tank this tower as it comes down on his head, as best I can tell.
Yeah, he just survived. I mean, because he says that everybody get out and move, but they were trapped in there.
I frankly don't know how anybody in this area survived inside of the tower here. But
unless you're on top of the walls like Arendir or something like that. Like, yeah, it seems like everything in the courtyard and crucially everyone climbing up the staircase, the winding path to the fortification just got landslid, man.
Which I think is a problem for later in the episode where Waldrick just kind of walks in and puts the sword in the stone there. It's
because he was right in the middle there.
He was right in the middle, and the whole area should be covered in rubble, right? How can he even access that thing?
Oh, yeah.
So
maybe that tower did mostly fall on the everybody inside the fort was safe. Because yeah, why would you design a fortification to destroy the fort? You know, like, so everyone inside the fort was okay. But like, they sold a story of him trapping them in there. Like, it's your ass now, boys.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But we'll revisit that here in a bit. Isildur shovels some shit and then talks with Galadriel until they get close enough to land for him to be able to see it. And then Elendil tells Galadriel what happened to Isildur's mother. Finally, Elendil reviews the route with the queen that they're going to take to get to the Southlands here. And she instructs him to get there as soon as you possibly can.
It's a lot to talk about here. You remember on the feedback show where we were talking about the plausibility of fitting, you know, several hundred men and horses on a ship, and I said, hey, you know mm-hmm. what? The Royal Navy really packed these guys in, gave him a scant 14 inches to sling up. That's not the situation on board. Every one of these guys had at least a full-size bed's worth of space. Not especially cramped. Each boat holds, I think 16 horses. I honestly don't know where they put all these guys and the sheer amount of mounted cavalry that they have later. And it's like that. It must be a TARDIS situation where it's way fucking bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Maybe 2/3 of the boat is actually underwater. They're just really, really tall boats.
It's got like 6 stories underwater. Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's like a skyscraper underwater.
Also, Isildur takes an apple out, gives a bite, goes to share it the horse. I looked. I don't think that horse actually got a bite.
No, he's teasing him.
And he takes it up on deck, takes one more bite, and throws half an apple overboard. I've seen a horse eat an apple core and all. Come on, man. What kind of shit is this? You're just teasing your favorite. I hate to see how you treat your worst enemy horse. If this is how you treat your beloved one.
Yeah, this is Beric. We get to meet Beric.
Yeah.
Maybe not for the first time. Is it the same horse that was dangling in those ropes last episode?
Well, maybe, but it was certainly the same horse that his sister rode up on when she was greeting them off of their sea cadet academy training mission.
Gotcha.
There's a lot of funny stuff because, like, he sort of stumbles on deck, is like, oh, I want to see the first light of land. And Gladriel is like, oh, I haven't seen it for an hour. And then, like, 30 seconds later, they see it, and they're like, it's huge. Like, so are elves super keen sighted or all Numenoreans canonically nearsighted? Because I cannot believe this guy did not see this fucking huge continent that they're like a mile off of.
Yeah.
Until the sun came up. But I don't know. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it does seem to just sneak up on him. I agree with Galadriel's sentiment here that humble work is nothing to be ashamed of. I think people need to remember that more often. You know, shoveling shit is just as important as leading troops into battle. It's all part of the same thing.
It's all well
in this case. I think it does. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Probably Numenorean. But like I appreciate what Galadriel's saying. I just want to know what the going rate for stable scooping work is in Lindon and Numenor, because I bet it doesn't pay as much as a swordsmith or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Celebrimbor is not making the same as the guy who shovels the horse shit.
He's making 120%, 1,200% more than the stable boys in London. Mm-hmm. It's a real scandal. It's a real scandal. The stable boys need to unionize.
Also, I laughed out loud when, I know this is horrible of me, but when Elendil tells Galadriel that their mother, or Isildur's mother, his wife, I assume, drowned, ringing in my head is "the sea is always right."
Yeah, you actually. So we actually got to watch this together for the first time last night. And as soon as he said, "What happened to his mother? Oh, she drowned." You said, "The sea's always, right, bitch." Yeah. No, you're not wrong. Then neither is the sea. You know, that lady had to go. Like, you're hearing your dead woman. You're hearing this dead woman.
Why?
Call to Isildur. Run. Run.
Right?
The sea was right, trying to save you from this crazy, crazy elf loving woman.
Yeah, what'd she do? I guess she, did the sea take her because she loved elves?
We don't know. I do not know why. I do not know why they are treating this like a mystery. It's bedeviling to me. And I feel like already six episodes in, we're not saying this enough. This is a gorgeous scene. Like, I actually think they took a boat out on the water and, like, you know, went to the southern point of the Northern Island and filmed it. It's just at dawn, no less. It is gorgeous. So, so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great sunrise. Also, speaking of the sunrise, what Elendil here is saying about he's sailing into the sunrise, right? It's a weird thing of geography for him because he never goes east. So, like, he's used to sailing into the sunrise when it's setting. But here it's rising, but he feels like it's setting. And I thought back to the king's warning to the queen about the darkness. Nothing awaits you there but darkness.
Well,
this evoked that in my mind.
And Adar is going to wage a war against the sun, which I'll have comments at the end of the episode. Speaking of beautiful, this transition from the queen poring over the battle map to zooming in and like being at the village, I thought that was pretty nifty, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Let's go over to Arendir again. He tries to break Sauron's hilt, but he can't, so he decides to hide it. Just a pretty quick scene there.
Yeah, it's very much like the Council of Elrond, where Gimli gets up and's like, let's just fucking do this! And he YOLOs the ring, and it blows up, and, God damn it, Elrond's like, you stupid dwarf, we don't possess any arts here that's capable of destroying this. Same deal. Mm-hmm. You can't, say what you will about Morgoth and Sauron, their craftsmanship.
Yeah.
Truly buy it for life.
Totally.
You gotta take it to the crack of Mount Doom or your money back guarantee on this son of a bitch. It's just never gonna go bad.
Mm-hmm. Then the village prepares their defense, and Bronwyn and Erendir explain the attack strategy and that the fallback point is going to be the tavern, which I might henceforth refer to as the Winchester, because this is the Shaun of the Dead plan.
Sure. Just hold up there, wait for it all to blow over.
Uh-huh. Theo wants to fight, but his mother says he needs to stay in the tavern and protect the weak. And she does give him a pep talk, though, that she gave him when he was a baby, I guess.
Yeah. There's the, you know, there's light and beauty. Mm-hmm. Forever on the beyond the reach of the shadow, and you find the light and the shadow won't find you. Yeah, it's and then the backdrop of all the babies and the friends and the lovers hugging and kissing each other, like it's good. It reminds me a lot of the Helm's Deep, you know, where there's all the scenes of the children and hiding out in the caves, like this is what we're fighting for, kind of deal.
Yeah,
also totally. Theo, your mom making you stay in the bar in the Winchester, horse shit. I think you can take her in a fight. I think you could start a fire 10 times more effectively than her. She arguably got that poor woman's throat slit all by herself. I kind of think that Bronwyn should have been in the Winchester with the spear, and Theo should have been out fucking up these orcs, because woof,
yeah.
She did not account herself well in the battle. Oh, one other thing. Maybe it's because they've humanized the orcs. I thought it was really fucked up that we start, like, they just got one of their heads on a spike. That's so barbaric. Mm. Like, say what you will about orcs, but they're thinking and feeling people. They're intelligent
with
creatures.
Names and hearts, as Adar points out later. Yeah.
Yeah, they got loyalty to each other. Brothers and sisters, they love their father. Like, it's like it really seems savage to cut off one of their heads and mount it on a fucking pike. That's bad. Yeah. That's evil person behavior, man.
For sure. There's a lot of evil person behavior coming from the quote-unquote good guys in this episode. Like I said, Galadriel's going to threaten genocide later this episode. So there's that. You know what I really took note of, and I don't know why I noticed this above all other things in this episode, but Theo has a great looking spear. That spear looks sturdy, like it's built out of oak. I don't often see physical props made of wood, or they're supposed to be made of wood, look like they are actually made of the wood they're supposed to be made of. Most of the time it's like foam, or they carve down some fucking balsa or whatever, and it doesn't feel like it has the weight. This thing looks great.
Yeah, it feels like it's could skewer a boar, you'd say.
Absolutely. All right, let's head over to the second half of this scene, I guess, where Erendir tells Bronwyn about the elvish tradition of planting aspirin seeds before a battle, and then promise her that they'll have their own garden full of them sometime after the battle. They're going to plant the rest of them, which by the end of the episode is all just completely gone to shit.
This is a very Harlequin romance, the whole I lassie, I want to tend the garden with you. I want to get my hands dirty. I want to get your hands dirty with you.
This is
I want to till the earth. I want to plow fields.
Yeah, that's the euphemism.
Oh, yeah.
The plow. Mm-hmm. That's definitely yep.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing: these Alfirin seeds connect to Adar too, right? Because in the very first shot of this episode, we see him planting these seeds before the battle, doing the exact same ritual that Erendir is doing.
Yeah,
which
life from death, which
doesn't
so I
seem
get
like
this
a bad guy thing to me, but.
No, he seems pretty fucking cool. Also, like, I get that this is an Elvish tradition. Why the fuck does Brownwyn know not only about it, but the fact that they're their own little saying, too? They didn't really explain that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, not really. Maybe it's just from living around, being monitored by and living around elves for a little while. I don't know.
Could be.
Maybe she's done some reading. Who knows? So, you know, one thing I'd like to know, and if I was going to be on the Lorehounds podcast this week, I'd probably ask John, but there's this Valar that Erendir claims watches over things that grow and the people who tend them. And I'd like to know more about that person. I'm sure they'll talk about it.
I thought he said just the Valar. What did he mention, one by name?
Oh, I thought he said there's the one of the Valar does this. I could be wrong, though.
Well, there's got to be a Valar that's responsible for crops and harvesting and all that. But yeah,
Totally.
I'll try to bring, because I'll be guesting on the Lorehounds this week. I'll try to bring that up to John.
Okay, that'd be cool. As the villagers wait, the orcs crest a hill and the battle begins. The humans spring a trap and they win round one with Erendir fighting a huge orc and Bronwyn saving him. Unfortunately, they were mostly just fighting the other half of their former townspeople. Mm. And I'll stop there momentarily to talk about this, because this has the very cool orc Erendir battle that I liked.
Yeah. It is funny, Bronwyn struggling to light this torch, like, just comically amount of time. She just cannot get this thing lit. Just cut back, not happening. Poor lady gets her throat slit. It's I don't know. This wasn't a very triumphant moment. Not sure what storytelling purpose it served to make her look ridiculous, but she got the job done. And I thought, this is all pretty clever. You got the one thing, it looks like it misses, and the orcs are like, ha ha ha, you suck. And then the other one comes slamming in, and suddenly they're in a fire of square of fire. And Erendir starts pouring down rockets, starts pouring down RPGs, starts pouring down arrows. And I love a good elvish archery scene. Goddamn, they look so smooth, pulling those back and letting them fly. And the rooftop archer is just target-rich environment. They're just pin cushioning these poor bastards.
Yeah, I love it.
I love the adorable little battering ram the orcs bring to the party. You know, like, this is not Grond. This is just a log, a log with a couple of handles on it.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that Erendir couldn't tag enough of them to keep them from getting the battering ram to the tavern. But I guess it ultimately didn't matter, right?
Right. You like the big orc, the Andre the Orcish.
I do, yeah. I thought there was some pretty sweet moves on display by Erendir. I really love when he kind of jumps against the building and then back the opposite way and dodges. And
yeah, parkour combat.
He felt nimble, but not overly so. Not like, there's some stunt work from Galadriel here that would make, you know, the most acrobatic of the elves blush. So I don't think he's on the same level as her, certainly, but no, he's got some moves up his sleeve.
She's something special, clearly. But like the him stabbing that splinter in the dude's eye and the blood just pouring out into his face and his mouth.
Yeah,
there's just some really gruesome orc deaths too, or human deaths. Like, the orcs has come up and stick these people, and, you know, take them to the ground, just stab. And there's a lot of bad deaths. And it also, that scene of them all celebrating and, you know, checking out the butcher's bill and seeing some of their people dying, and then slowly coming to the realization that a lot of the villagers that left with the butcher, baker, and candlestick maker were put in orc armor, and they largely killed their own neighbors.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
Sucks. Yeah, you don't. Uh-huh. You hate to see it.
I really like the tension and the buildup in the scene too, because the entire time I'm thinking, okay, where is Adar? Obviously, he's not going to be dead, right? That's no conclusion for what I looked at as like a main villain here. So he can't be dead, but when's he going to show up? And it kept not bringing him into the equation. And I felt like it was pretty effective, just getting me to guess, like, okay, where's he going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And then we start round two of the battle, where a fresh group of orcs show up, and it does not go nearly as well for the humans. They get pinned down in the tavern. Bronwyn's dad dies, and she gets shot with an arrow. And Erendir uses the seeds to save her, and then Adar starts breaking into the tavern, and we kind of cut away. So we can talk about this. So much for that garden. He just used up all the seeds on her wound. I guess
aspirin seeds kills the pain.
Whether you lose the seeds or the woman, I guess it's half a dozen of one and 16 dozen of the other. I don't know what the saying is.
I also don't like, I, you know, it wasn't beyond the realm of belief that a lot of these people might die. Like, Theo might die. Mm-hmm. Bronwyn might die, so I was kind of reasonably afraid for everybody. Especially when Bronwyn started taking arrows, I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is some brutal stuff. I did think it's funny as they're falling back to the keep. There's this one guy that takes an arrow, and two guys help him to his feet. And then one of the guys that just helped him to his feet takes an arrow and goes down. And the guy who just got help kind of looks down and is like, tough shit. Yep. I know we're like literally 12 inches from the threshold, but I guess you're going to die.
Cold hearted bastard.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Can't possibly be arsed to drag you into the Winchester.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, can you really seal a wound shut with a firebrand?
I seriously doubt it.
I don't think that
I'm
wood,
willing to let it go.
Yeah, but it's like it's one of those things where it's like, why didn't they just have a just stick a blade in the fire? That's how you do it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Instead I mean, you will burn the shit out of yourself, but like wood's a terrible conductor of heat. That's why dudes can walk across a bed of coals.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would have heated up one of them kitchen knives and done it. But you know, minor problem.
And I mean, with these flowers, these seeds, I don't know what the properties of those things are. I'm just going to chalk it all up to magic, right? He rubs them on there. He hits it with a little bit of glowing red embers, and he's good.
That's heat activated the medicinal value.
Yes. Could be, for all I know. Anyway, we cut away as Adara starts to break into the tavern, and we see Galadriel, Hobrin, the Numenoreans all riding as hard as they can toward the village.
I thought this was not necessary. You know, because it's like they're not here yet, but they're like, it really bled the tension from the scene, because if you're in it, you're like kind of almost forget about the Numenoreans. But it's almost like the show's like, don't forget about the Numenoreans. I'm like, well, why not? Like, it's more effective if we do.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if throughout Helm's Deep, you just cut to Eomer and Gandalf riding hell for leather, you know. Like, we're coming, hold that, Theoden, we're coming. Like, it's one of the things that makes that work is how desperate it was, and you'd almost forgotten that, oh, yeah, look to the east on the third day. I don't know. It's weird. It's a 5 second of Numenoreans just riding hard.
Yeah, especially since
are they in, like, three time zones away? Because the sun's fucking up where the Numenoreans are riding.
Yeah, I mean, it must just be a flashback. They talk about how it's, like, a day's ride to get there, so
yeah, like, so that's what really Elendil's
pointing out to the queen. Yeah,
that's really weird. Okay,
so that must be a flashback to earlier in the day. Anyway, let's go back to Adar. He breaks into the tavern and demands to know where the hilt is, and Theo must have apparently seen Arendir hide it because he knows where it is and gives it up when his mother is threatened. I think there was a shot previously in another scene where Arendir says, yeah, we got to hide it and you can't even know, where Theo's looking over at him. They never show him like sneaking off to go observe where it's hidden, but I assume that's when it happened.
Because, that was one of the questions I had. I didn't think that made a lot of sense, because it's like, well,
yeah.
Did Arendir just not know how to keep that shit on lock? Because
right, or maybe he has some kind of blood connection, he can sense where it is.
Makes a lot of sense if it was but they also could have maybe told that story of him and the, like, you know, I think Lord of the Rings did a pretty good job establishing a language of cinema for someone being called to by a dark object, right?
Totally.
But that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Because Arendir's got like these crazy elf senses. How the hell could he be observed in this private place and not know it? You know?
Yeah.
It's not like you're a mile away with binoculars. You're like, I would think he'd be able to hear you breathing. But what you say makes a lot of sense.
Just then, Galadriel et al. Here arrive and run roughshod over the orcs. Adara tries to flee with the hilt, but Galadriel and Hobrin chase him down, and Hobrin wants to kill him, but Galadriel stops him. Her words, stab, twist, and rip, come into full effect here. They're just immediately right off the bat, stab, twist, and rip. That's how you kill an orc. I loved it.
Dwayne the Rock Jr. was paying attention to Orc Stabbing School because he was ripping and tearing. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I also saw, I saw a shot that very much confused me when someone is riding at an orc. The orc shoots an arrow at them, and the person like falls off the side of their horse. And I'm like, well, that person just got shot to death. But then they ride past the orc, and the orc explodes into gore.
Sure does.
Like, wait, what happened? It turns out that's Galadriel, and Galadriel dodged that arrow by hanging off the horse,
going side saddle, trick riding, and not only took this dude's head off, took his like head, neck, shoulder, arm.
Yeah, hit him like 3-4 times on the way past.
Just gibbed him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty gruesome. And also pretty cool.
I like the chain trick. Riding within chain, just cutting through swaths of orcs at a time.
Mm-hmm. Poor Beric gets sliced.
Didn't like to see that. Poor horse gets a little cut on him. Also, as awesome as Dwayne the Rock Jr. was, his other friend did not acquit himself well.
Antamo or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
I had a hard time. So they did a thing here that movies don't often do, which is they left everybody's freaking helmets on. And so, which is smart in a battle, you want to wear a helmet.
But it did make it hard to keep track. Yeah.
Is he the one that the orc just kind of fell onto?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Like Dwayne the Rock Jr. went and saved him, and then
gotcha.
He did get one stick in. He wasn't useless.
All right. The most useless of the Numenoreans, though. What was it like? One Numenorean is worth 12 humans in battle. He's worth maybe exactly one.
Yeah.
That's sad.
I will say that like there was some impressive stunt riding. I don't know how much of this is CG, how much of it was real, but that like leap that Isildur takes over like this wagon to get at it, because that was also a kind of cool moment. Him riding to save his dad. Turns out he didn't have to, because Halbrand was right there to like lower the fucking boom.
Sure.
But there's just some really sick horsemanship. You gotta love a mass cavalry charge. It's always a good time. It's one of the best parts of Return of the King, when the Rohirrim just ride fucking through everybody in the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. It's cool.
Oh yeah, the orcs were totally outnumbered and outmatched here. And then we get, you know, the part where Galadriel and Halbrand chase down Adar. Adar uses the tactic of tricking up the horse. Or, sorry, Halbrand does to trips up Adar's horse.
Throwing a broom handle through the horse's spokes. So,
they give you a shot. Don't worry, everybody. The horse is fine, right? The horse stands up. No broken legs. Not going to have to put it down.
Right.
Just so you know.
Right. No, fake horses were harmed in the filming of this fake scene.
The other shocking thing to me is when Halbrand gets him on the ground and is like, "Do you remember me?" And in movies, they're always supposed to say, "I remember you." But Adar was just like, "Nope, never seen you before, dude."
No, that's always I thought it was hilarious. Sick thing for the villain to say. Like, I have no idea who you are. You know, right. You think about me every day. I've never thought of you at all.
Yeah.
Also,
the Don Draper to Pete.
If you listen to our Lord of the Rings series of podcasts, you know that one of my all time favorite scenes in Fellowship is where Liv Tyler is riding her horse. And she's trying to get away from the ring wraiths. And just as they're about to get to her, she leans forward and whispers in the horse ear. She says, "Nor Olim, Asphaloth, Nor Olim," which means run faster. And they cut. There's an inset cut to the horse that gives a performance that emotes. Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah, lady. And he just like turns on the turbo, the horse turbo boosters. And they do the exact same thing. Galadriel says Nor Olim to this nameless horse. They cut through the horse and the horse is like, not as easy a look. He's no Asphaloth. But he's still the horse still gives the like fuck yeah lady, starts going even faster, and I like that. I like these little nods to the main sequence Jackson films.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I have questions about Adar, you know, that maybe we can talk about here in the scene when Galadriel questions him, but why doesn't he remember Halbrand? Very curious.
There's some mystery. Halbrand clearly remembers him. There's some mysterious things going on here.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
He does try to cold read Halbrand, though. It's like, ah, oh, did I cause a loved one pain? A child, perhaps?
Your aunt, your sister. Name begins with an R and S. It's something with their lungs. Breast cancer? That's close to lungs, right? You got to give me something here. Are you familiar with the cold read?
Seriously, dude, I've never met you. Yeah, so we go back to the village where Valandiel apparently is this Dwayne The Rock Johnson Jr.'s name.
Nope, it's Dwayne The Rock Jr. I'm sorry. That's perfect name.
DTRJ Jr. Tells Isildur that they've got
his spot. He's not Dwayne The Rock Johnson Jr. He's Dwayne The Rock Jr. That just flows so much better. Dwayne The Rock Jr.
DTRJ. Dwayne
The
Rock Jr.
His last name is Jr. Yeah.
Okay, I love it. No relation to Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No. That'd be an unfortunate mistake to make.
Oh, shit. Yeah, so he tells Isildur they've got a spot on the company going out to the woods to hunt for the remaining orcs. And Ontamo says, I'm done fighting. I've had 10 minutes of battle. It's felt like a lifetime.
Dude,
I was in the biggest one-sided battle I've ever seen on a huge charge of cavalry on horseback against a woefully outmatched force of orcs that we totally ran roughshod over, and that's it. I'm spent for a lifetime.
I almost got ran through by a hideous monster man, and I'm covered in black blood. Fuck
Fair.
All of this. I want to go back drinking and carousing with all the girls in Numenor, please.
Yeah. And then we go to Galadriel asking Adar if he is one of the Moriondor, the elves that were taken by Morgoth and corrupted. And rather than answer, he claims that Sauron actually wanted to heal Middle-earth after Morgoth's defeat, but that he just couldn't get the knowledge dark enough to make it happen. And eventually he got Adar got fed up with sacrificing all of his children, so he killed Sauron. Galadriel doesn't believe this and promises to force him to watch the genocide of his entire race. And then he talks some shit. Galadriel decides to kill him, but Halbrand stops her. Jesus Christ, Galadriel. We got a lot of rings of power to ponder. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. And now, let's dig a little deeper on Dug Too Deep.
It's insane how little pity she has for this guy who's manifestly a victim.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can say whatever you want about what he's doing right now and his means, his methods, but it's like, it'd be like delivering these lines of Magneto. It's like, chill, man. Mm-hmm. He was a German Jew that went through a fucking Holocaust. Like, yeah, maybe needs to be stopped, but let's not want to, I'm going to drag all the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. I'm going to gut them right in front of you. You're going to be the last to die right. With the screams echoing in your ears, old man. Like, goddamn. All right.
And then
Galadriel.
And then he just says, Uruk, and she decides, you know what? Fuck that plan. I'm going to kill you.
Right. Right.
She's also wishy-washy, or easily taunted.
I love the whole trope of we can mow through as many of you fucking Uruk mooks as we want and not stain her conscience at all, but if we have the temerity to kill the head bad guy, that would be irredeemably wicked.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Thank you for calling me from the darkness as she's picking, as she's wiping the black blood of the Uruk off of her, you know. At least I didn't kill this guy.
Yeah, I actually like some parts of the dynamic here. I think mm-hmm. the Uruk stuff that Adar is doing, where he's trying to convince her that these are people worthy of living, just like people just like her, right? All created by the same
living,
god,
thinking, feeling. Yeah, we're here by, like, if Uru didn't want us here, then he wouldn't give us the secret fire, right?
Right. Yeah. I like that stuff, and I like the, you know, she calls him a slavering orc or whatever, and mm-hmm. Halbrand comes in and stops her from killing him. And then he says Uruk in her face, right? Corrects her again.
Right.
And then she just slices him a little bit, just a little on the neck.
Yeah, just a little neck slice.
I like all that dynamic. That was pretty good.
Also, I love the, like, when she spits this unhinged rant to this guy, and he's like, seems I'm not the only elf that's been transformed into darkness. Perhaps your search for the evil should have ended in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking sick burn. You walked right into the Galadriel.
Sure did. Yeah, she's been acting pretty shitty for a lot of the show.
I think it's interesting. They're setting up Sauron as, you know, there's a lot of this, like, he's looking for power over flesh, not of flesh, but over it, power over the unseen world. I think he's talking about the Wraith world that we see that you go into once you put on the rings of power.
Mm-hmm.
But he was missing some shadow of dark knowledge that even he could uncover. I wonder what that is. Like, what missing piece of sorcery does Sauron need to make the thing? And also, is Adar being straight with his motivations that Sauron is just trying to stitch back together Middle Earth?
I mean, maybe from a certain point of view, sure. And he doesn't care that it's going to be a dark and twisted version of Middle Earth, so long as he can unite the forces that he wants to unite.
Yeah. Well, he also said bringing the ruined lands together in perfect order. Anytime I hear the word perfect order, I feel like I can hear the goose stepping of boots on pavement. You know, the trains are just running a little too on time.
Uh-huh. Totally.
It's a little perfect order. Hard to do. Hard to do with us unperfect people. Unperfect. See,
unperfect.
Just proving your point.
All right, let's go to Galadriel and Halbrand sitting down for a little chat. Galadriel tells him to forgive himself for what he did, and Halbrand thinks that might actually be able to happen. And they both admit to feeling something while fighting side by side during the battle. Then Harbrand is called away to see the queen, and Galadriel wipes her blade on the hilt's covering, which is interesting.
Yeah. Is it possible that Halbrand is Sauron?
Sure. We still don't know what he did.
You know, listening to the lore cast of our buddies, the Lorehounds, they talk about how this guy, you know, comes in a very fair form, and he's very charming, and he's very persuasive, and I don't see how Adar got that sword. I honestly don't. Like, it doesn't seem like he had the time to switch it with Waldron and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Galadriel gives him the package, right?
The package?
Does he have access to the sword at this point?
I think she holds on to it here.
So, okay, because that was one of my linchpins, is that she had trusted him with the sword for a bit. But no, she doesn't actually do that.
Yeah, I really couldn't tell you how Waldrig gets a hold of that sword.
Yeah, that didn't quite connect. Like, I just didn't seem like they told the story of them having enough time to make a switch like that.
And if it's on Galadriel's person the entire time, I just don't know when he would have got it.
Yeah.
Because she gives it to Arendir at some point, and he gives it to Theo, but it's already been switched by the time Arendir has it. Anyway, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that is crazy. Maybe that is crazy.
So there might be a clue here. Do you think that the actual hilt would have reacted by wiping blood onto it?
Ooh.
On the covering of it? Or would it not react because, A, maybe it needs human blood or something, but B, maybe it's, you know, has to actually touch the hilt itself, so it didn't react. But I'm wondering they didn't put the shot in there just so we know,
'cause they definitely,
it's already gone at this point.
They definitely inserted it, but I don't, so you're saying that it would have started to transform.
That's
our hint that it's already been replaced. Because they did, they do inset shoot her wiping the blood on that particular thing. Yeah.
Well, I wonder if the chase isn't a distraction, is what I'm saying. Like, Adar took a fake package and ran with it after he'd already given Waldrick the sword. Just because I don't think they ever opened it.
Just to give Waldrick the chance to get away. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's my guess. And they were telling us that by showing us it didn't react to this blood.
Gotcha.
But all right, I could be wrong.
I'm fucking with that theory.
Here's the other question: are they trying to make Galadriel and Halbrand an item?
Oh,
because they're really relating to each other hard in this scene
over their shared bloodlust and trauma. I didn't see any romance. No.
Okay.
Did you?
Yeah, around the edges.
Huh. No, I didn't see it.
I felt like there was something unspoken because Halbrand got called away here, but I could be wrong.
The unspoken thing is he's actually a Sauron.
That could be it too. Yeah. All right, let's go over to Bronwyn thanking the queen for saving them. And the queen calls her a leader, but not the true leader. Because she then introduces the true leader, Halbrand. And Bronwyn recognizes the symbol on his sack and asks if he's the king that was promised. And of course you do, which you're absolutely always supposed to do when someone asks you if you're either a king or a god. You say, yes.
Yes, I 100%
am. 100% I am. Bow before me. Yep. And everyone does. They celebrate.
Yeah, it's such a good negotiating move. I wish they'd explain what the fuck this sack is. Because Brownwyn recognizes it. What is inside of it? What is it like? Is it really the ancestral testicles of the line of Southern Kings? I don't know. And it's also a damn good thing that Bronwyn is like, shoo, I don't know about this leader thing. I just want to get back. Imagine if she was kind of like, you know what? I actually got a first taste of leadership and these people taking me seriously. And I'm really looking forward to it. I got a whole bunch of ideas I got to make the community better. I've been really awkward, but Bronwyn's like, oh my God, so heavy, the crown on my brow. If only there was someone more kingly to take it. And yeah. They really set up Halbrand to take over.
Totally.
And the village loves it. The village loves it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny that, like, as he's, like, looking all proud and, like, happy and, like, do you see this shithole village? This is what you're ruling over. It's, like, wrecked. There's tons of orc corpses. Also, it's about the whole continent's about to go boom, so.
Right.
He's got the king of nothing. He's the king of nothing now.
Yeah. All right. Galadriel gives the hilt back to Arendir. Or does she? That's the whole scene. And then Arendir goes over to Theo and tells him not to feel so bad for giving the hilt to Adar. Theo says he misses the hilt and the power he felt when wielding it. So Arendir gives it to him and says, well, maybe it'll help if you tell the Numenoreans to throw this into the sea on their way back. Theo, of course, immediately tries to use it, sees that it doesn't work, opens it up, finds just a plain axe inside.
Yeah, the only person you could possibly give it be worse to give this to is Isildur, who has a proven track record of hanging on to cursed artifacts. Because, like, yeah. this kid who's been haunted and touched by darkness and hears this thing calling, hey, take this kilo of heroin and do the right thing with it, kid. You know, mm-hmm. I know you've had some trouble getting off this stuff, but I think you'll feel real good if you're the one that surrenders it. What the fuck?
And then he immediately runs up to Arendir, pulls on his coattail, and is like, Arendir, this isn't working. Why isn't this working?
Yeah. Oh, shit, they swapped it for baking soda, or I don't know. I don't know. What's heroin look like? Is it like yellow powder? I don't know.
Heroin? That's I don't know. I've only seen it on Breaking Bad.
There's very few rules I have in life, but one mm-hmm. is don't fuck with heroin.
Yeah.
So I don't. I do not know what it looks like.
So it turns out that Waldrey has the hilt, and he goes and places it in the Sauron stone. I don't know what else to call this, the altar. And it causes a dam to burst, sending a flood of water through the tunnels dug by the orcs. I thought the tower came down and buried this whole area in rubble, Aaron.
It's debatable. That tower might have just slid down the side of the hill and taken out the orcs that are on the outside of it. I buy that.
Okay.
So...
I honestly
thought this was pretty fucking cool when I realized what was happening. I'm like, oh, because I always thought, like, what the fuck are these tunnels? They don't even go all the way where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's not tunnels, they're canals. And they're siphoning all this water to the heart of what's going to eventually become Mount Doom, triggering an explosion. And I'm like, oh, because Mordor, famously, there's not much sunlight. You know, it's the skies are choked with these volcanic fumes and... You know, we know that the volcanic eruptions can blot out the sun in a wider... So, like, he's in a very literal sense, eliminating the sun from the orcs' lives in the southern mm-hmm. continent. And I'm like, fuck yeah, this is actually pretty, pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because we need a corresponding scene first.
Sure.
Where Elendil tries to teach Isildur how to bond with his horse, just like his dead
horse
wife taught him.
Horse bond is what you use to fix up your horse when someone's thrown a broomstick
when it gets...
It's like Bondo, only for horses. It's horse bond.
Yeah, or when it gets cut in battle. Yeah, you just slather it with horse bond.
Yeah, he's got to buff that out, throw some horse bond on it, color match it. Looks like Beric's a chestnut. So yeah, you uh-huh. get that from the horse store and you're good to go.
Nice. Yeah, and now we can talk about the floodwaters, which start erupting from the ground, running through the orc tunnels, straight into a volcano, causing that to erupt. It peppers the village with lava bombs, which is hilarious.
Man. The devastation.
And eventually, a cloud of smoke, fire, and heat that I'm going to say absolutely kills every living thing in its path, blasts the village and Galadriel square in the face.
So I've got the Wikipedia entry for pyroclastic flow.
Oh, please, please indulge me.
Pyroclastic flows are the most deadly of all volcanic hazards and are produced as a result of explosive eruptions. They normally touch the ground and hurtle downhill or spread laterally under gravity. They flow along the ground away from a volcano at average speeds of 100 kilometers an hour, but are capable of reaching speeds up to 700 kilometers an hour. The gases can reach temperatures of about 1,000 C. That's 1,800 Fahrenheit for us stupid Americans.
Yep.
So when I see this, because I know a little bit about, I've seen a volcano movie or two. I knew about this phenomenon, and I'm like, oh, well, surely they won't show the actual pyroclastic flow hitting the village. And then they do, and Galadriel's staring right into it. And I'm like, okay, maybe a high elf lord who's essentially functionally immortal can tank this. But every fucking human and orc is going to be dead. Dead as disco.
Mm-hmm. And then it and cuts there are so black. Many important ones here.
And I'm like, well, maybe I said that's like, oh, well, maybe they're about to show that this was Galadriel having a premonition of the darkness that's come. And she's going to they're going to have to try to ward this off. And that's going to be the rest of the season. And I'm like, but then it just cuts to black right as the cloud gets to her. And I'm like, oh, no. Yeah, that's like I said, even if they come up with some creative way to undo, because like the worst thing they can do is just have everybody covered in dust in the next episode.
Oh, like, my God. Here's the scariest part of this is you can hear. I can't remember if it's Hallbrand or Ellen Deal shouting, get behind the wall right before this. And I'm going to assume that the wall he's talking about is made of stone. Do you know what lava is, Aaron? Do you know what
it is? Largely liquid stone. Yeah. In the case of pyroclastic cloud, it's essentially rock steam. And if you think a wall will save you, go ask those fuckers in Pompeii, the ones who are in their basements and their interior rooms and are covered in like feet of ash and rock and died where they stood. Like, God damn it. Why? Oh.
So my biggest fear is they're coming back and Ellen Deal / Hallbrand / all the villagers will have ducked behind walls and be fine.
Yeah.
And that is going to be a joke.
It's going to be essentially like 9/11, where it's like everyone just kind of gets covered in dust and there's like this devastation and all that stuff, because that's what these guys are from. Oh, man.
I don't know. Maybe you just shouldn't. You shouldn't know enough about volcanism to be dangerous watching this show. But
or writing this show.
Yeah, I just thought that they were telling the story of everyone there dying in futility. And they can't all, because Galadriel, Elendil, no one else. Galadriel, Elendil, and Isildur walk out of this. They moonwalk out of this situation.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a huge unforced error. I don't like anything about that part of this scene, despite loving high-res lava bombs dropping on people.
I mean, it'd been a sick intro if they just like this enormous and the fire bombs were fine, and that was cool. And then like imagine if you just see this like dark cloud that's like blotting out the sun, and then the orcs start, you know, because they like the orcs were starting to like take care of the humans at the end. But like you don't have to worry about it. There's about 1,000-degree cloud going to boil their flesh off their bones here in a second. Probably you guys too. But they could have done this like there's so many different ways they could have made showed that like things are changing and for the worse. This is no longer the land of men. This is going to be the land of orcs. And they did the most dramatic, schmuck baitiest way possible. And I think it's unfortunate. I don't know what everybody else thinks about it, but I was not a big fan.
Yeah. I don't care, you know, how fantastical a series is. I can't just turn my brain entirely off and say, well, that's how it is in this world. Especially when you're dealing with things that happen in our real world.
Yeah, and again, we don't know what they're going to do next week. Maybe, like I was about to shit my pants when they abandoned the fortification to go on defense. So like maybe, and they handled that beautifully. Maybe there's a way that I'm not seeing that they can turn this thing around. But yeah, and it's not fatal. It's not like, my suspension of disbelief is destroyed. It's just one of those things where you can't do that too many times.
It's just
in my mind.
It's cheap if they're just going for the dramatic, you know, cliffhanger. I think it's just cheap and it's poorly done. And stacking this on top of what I feel is just a true blunder in the last episode with the oath.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an emerging pattern of careless writing here that worries me and makes me think that a couple more of these and I might just not be interested in watching anymore. But
yeah, if it becomes a pattern of cheap cliffhangers and all that kind of stuff, like I said, I got to see the next week's episode. It's not single-handedly. It's just one of those things. It's just, to me, it's just unfortunate.
Sure.
because no one made them do this. There's many other ways they could have told, I think what their story is, which is cool. Like I said, this is a cool idea. The fact that you are weaponizing Mount Doom to blot out the sun and make a permanent, you know, colony for the orcs and all the quote unquote evil things in Middle Earth
into their home. Yeah.
Give them a home for the first time. And you're not literally destroying the sun, because that would be a little bit hokey. Because again, I've looked out the window, the sun's still there, and Earth is supposed to be Middle Earth are the same place. So I know he didn't do that. But this is a way to poetically like blot the sun from the sky. I was all up until the last 10 seconds of this episode.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe one of the possibilities is Galadriel just has so many Alfurion seeds in her pocket that like the fire can't get through or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, she could have like, I don't know, fucking half a Silmarillion in her hand, and it's formed some magical shield like Gandalf did when he's fighting the Balrog. He actually
pyroclastic cloud. You shall not pass. Yeah.
You shall not ash. And they put a stop to it. Who knows? Because this is a world of magic, and you can do things like that. If like everybody that's important is hovering under some white dome that Galadriel's maintaining with some kind of effort of will, fine. Okay. That would be actually pretty metal. But we'll see. We'll see. They definitely got us in a cliffhanger of one way or another.
That's the shame of it, right? Like this discussion should have been all around like the turning of the land into where's the Mount Doom
location? Darkness. Yeah, Mordor.
Mordor. Right? It should have been like how cool that was and an idea. And it is very cool.
It is cool.
But it's diminished by this ending, in my opinion.
It has.
Anyway, that's the end.
I blame Isildur. If he hadn't have thrown away half an apple and given it to a horse, none of this shit would have happened.
Yeah. I'm all out of Alfurion seeds. I'll come back next week with more.
I'm going to take 2 Alfurion and call the doctor in the morning. See how I'm feeling. How are you guys feeling? If you'd like to let us know for the feedback episode, it's going to be out early next week. Send that in to Doug2Deep@baldmove.com. I would love to hear it. Talk us off this cliff. Cast a wall of white magic that's going to protect us from the searing heat of our takes, so we don't get burnt up in it. Doug2Deep@baldmove.com. Of course, twitter.com/baldmove is how you keep up with our latest releases and what we're up to. And what else? If you like to get ad-free feeds and a whole bunch of other bonus features, always welcome to join the club. Find out how to do that and other ways to support Bald Move at support.baldmove.com. Really appreciate it. Couldn't do it without you. That's it for this week. I'm very curious to see what the Lorehounds get up to. I will be guesting on their Lorecast this week. That will be out Monday. The feedback podcast will be out Wednesday. Doug2Deep@baldmove.com. That's a cliffhanger for the week. Find out what's going on next time. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.